It's Thursday, November 10th, 2016. This is the Hermetic Hour. I'm your host, Poke Runyon. And tonight, we review the career of Steve Ditko's Dr. Stephen Strange, Master of the Mystic Arts. From his Marvel Comics debut in 1963, to the 2016 Disney Marvel film released this month. We will discuss Doc's ancestor, the 1930s radio sorcerer, Shandu the Magician, and give a synopsis of Strange's early comic book adventures and the live-action films. There were two of them. Both the 1978 and the 2016 film versions emphasize Hermetic symbolism and method, drawing on Eastern yoga for power and technique, resulting in a system that is a sort of an astral kung fu. In both films, the master teacher is European, whereas in the original comic book version, he was a Tibetan Lama called the Ancient One. In the recent film, there have been some changes in the service of political correctness that are difficult to understand. Why change Baron Mordo, the original European villain, into Doc's black sidekick, and then create a new villain to play Mordo's traditional role, which will be played by a European actor? So, if you want to explore this and other deep mysteries of Doctor Strange's magical universe, tune in and we'll consult the Orb of Akamoto. And, Frater Heracles, are you there?
I'm here, Poke. How are you?
Yeah. Well, welcome aboard. I'm joined with very honored Frater Heracles from Austin. From Avalon Lodge in Texas, and who had the privilege recently of meeting one of the screenwriters on the new Doctor Strange movie, which we'll talk about. But before we get into that, yeah, John. Let me do a quick introduction here.
Of course.
Yeah. Okay. All right. In order to understand Doctor Strange and his magical universe, we need to examine the roots and growth of New Age occultism. All of the formative elements in the Doc Strange stories arise from the theosophic ideas and writings of Helena Blavatsky and her followers. It is the yoga mysticism of Hinduism and Sikh Sadhism, which Blavatsky attributed to Tibetan Tantric Buddhism. Now, this also applies to the earlier Sorcerer Supreme, or Master of the Mystic Arts, the 1930s radio drama Swami, Frank Chandler, known as Shandu the Magician, upon which the 1960s Stephen Strange is based. Both these Americans, that's both Chandler and Strange, went east to acquire their magical powers. Both studied under yoga masters. Chandler, Shandu, mastered Raja Yoga under a Hindu Swami. Stephen Strange mastered Tantric Yoga under a Tibetan Lama. Both kept in constant contact. This is one of the common things that the both of them had in common. Both kept in constant contact with their masters by long-range telepathy. And both, and here we'll add along with Lamont Cranston, the Shadow, who was, of course, also a knockoff on Shandu, used hypnosis and mesmerism to create illusions. There is a strong infusion of Western hermetic magic in both the Shandu and the Strange adventures. We can probably trace this back to Blavatsky's interest in Eliphas Levy's romanticized version of Hermetic and Kabbalistic magic. Levy also influenced Albert Pike and the Golden Dawn. All this brings up a big cultural question. Why did these Westerners, Chandler, Cranston, and Strange, all have to go east to acquire magical knowledge and power? This question has a one-word answer. Yoga. Why yoga? Because yoga is a mental as well as a physical discipline. It links the mind and the body and enables the body and the mind to empower and transform each other. It may have originated in the West with Pythagoras, but like so many other ancient arts, it only survived at the extreme boundaries of its dissemination in the highlands of Central Asia. I mean, as an anthropologist, let me point out that if you really want to find authentic Old English country dancing, where do you go? You go to the mountains of Appalachia, and you get as far back in the Smoky Mountains as you can, and you'll find them doing old English country dancing. And this is the same thing with yoga. If it started with Pythagoras, and we think it did, and we even have said so in our book, it disseminated out to India. And to Persia, and Omar Khayyam kind of confirms that, and then eventually Patanjali started it in India, and then the Muslims came in and ran all the yogi the Buddhist yogis and most of the tantrics up into Tibet. Now, until recently, Central Asia is where we had to go to learn it. Hermes teaches us that magic is all in the mind. The method of magic is hypnosis. The programming of magic is astrology, Kabbalah, and mythology. Yoga puts it all together and empowers the process. Well, until recently, here in the West, we symbolized our superhero magicians like Stephen Strange, and they had to journey to the East to acquire their yoga empowerments. But in 1985, the Tibetans, having been run out of Tibet, a lot of the yogis having been run out of Tibet by the Chinese, came to us, and here in all the way to Los Angeles, and gave us Sri Hivajra, Vajrayogini, and finally Kalachakra, enabling us to recover and recreate a magical hermetic yoga of our own. And of course, I'll end this little summary with a plug for our book, which you can get on Amazon, called Hermetic Yoga, Beyond the Middle Pillar, and this is Volume 1, and we're working on Volume 2 right now. Anyway, so that's kind of the introduction to this. John, tell us about meeting meeting one of the screenwriters in there in Austin. John?
Yes, there was a chance.
You're there. Tell us about your meeting with one of the screenwriters in the latest Doctor Strange movie.
Well, it was kind of a chance meeting, actually. I didn't know he was going to be at this comic book store, but I took the kiddos to go see Doctor Strange, and totally blown away by the, you know, we went 3D IMAX, which is a great way to see it. And the effects are just off the charts, through the roof, amazing. I really enjoyed the film. The story was fantastic. I really enjoyed Benedict Cumberbatch. And so I was coming out of it like just really high and stoked about it, and I told the kids, I'm like, let's go see if we can find some Doctor Strange comic books, and We went to this place in Austin. It was a comic book store called Dragon's Lair, and we went there. And then all of a sudden, I noticed there's this, right when we walk in, there's a guy dressed up like Doctor Strange, and there's a man sitting at a table signing autographs for posters. And it was Chris Cargill who wrote the script for Doctor Strange. And I was a bit starstruck. I was like, wow, that's just an amazing coincidence that this guy, just finished watching one of my favorite new favorite films, you know. And then the guy that came up with the story is sitting right there, and he's like, what'd you think of the movie? I was like, I was just absolutely fantastic. One of my favorite movies so far. And he's just a really nice guy. Took him about a year and a half to write the film, and he lives in Austin, so it was pretty cool coincidence after that.
Well, he and the other two writers, obviously, when you see the film, if you are a Doctor Strange fan, and I have been one ever since about a year before we started the OTA, I think I was into Doctor Strange. At that time, Steve Ditko, the original creator, had left Marvel, and the writers and the artists had kind of deteriorated by that time. But fortunately, since then, I've been able to collect the old Doctor Strange material, which is still available, by the way.
I didn't really come across Doctor Strange until much later in life. I was kind of raised in kind of a strict home environment where I wasn't actually allowed to read comic books. So I didn't even know about Doctor Strange existed until, I think it was a video game, actually. It was like Ultimate Alliance, and it had all the Marvel characters, and there was this Doctor Strange character that would go in between, dimensions and worlds and fight these, monsters in hell and different, go to Asgard with Thor and all this. I was like, wow, who is this guy, you know? And so when I started looking into Doctor Strange, I was like, man, I was really surprised how much, real magic was in Doctor Strange. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah. Doctor Strange, well, as I said in the introduction to this, to the show, the Doctor Strange's magic is essentially essentially Tibetan Tantra. And with some Hindu Raja yoga in it, but one of the things about Doctor Strange's stories and his magic, it's kind of like that old Lloyd Bridges TV show Sea Hunt, and Sea Hunt had a formula that the writers had to go by that must have driven them crazy, that something like 80% of the action in each episode of Sea Hunt had to be underwater. Well, I've been a diver for years and sailor and a diver, and all that. I've written a lot of diving stories, including the one you're working on, scanning right now. But how in the hell do you write a story about diving and sailing and put 80% of it underwater? It's just impossible. And yet, in Doctor Strange has about the same formula as far as the comic book version is concerned, and Ditko was able to handle it and handled it beautifully, and that was that about 80% of it had to be on the astral and in other dimensions. And Ditko was a marvelously creative artist, but he was also a fan of Salvador Dali
But he ended up leaving, though. He ended up leaving in a huff, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Well, I'm going to get into that. I've got a little bio on Steve. We're going to talk about that a little bit. Plus, in the second, there are two books. I don't know whether you have. You didn't get the Masterworks, the Doctor Strange Masterworks books, did you?
No, but I did get the Hermetic Yoga.
Well, you got Hermetic Yoga, yeah. But Doctor Strange number one, I've got that in hardback. That's all the original. That starts with Steve's 1963 introduction, and then I got the last one, number two, and which has the last of Ditko's stories. There's about four stories in number two, which finishes up Ditko's contribution, and after that, he left. And now the truth of the matter is, in spite of what Stan Lee says, Steve Ditko created Doctor Strange. He wrote it, and he drew it. He penciled it. You know, the way a bullpen works, as most of us know, is that you got.
Did he start in Strange Tales? Is that right?
Yeah, it started in Strange Tales, which was the title for a monthly comic, Strange Tales, and they also had. They also had somebody else in Strange Tales too, I guess. One of their other characters, I forget who, but then eventually he got his own Doctor Strange magazine. But by that time, Steve was long gone, and those Doctor Strange, I have some of those Doctor Strange comics, and frankly, to tell you the truth, they're kind of underwhelming when compared to Steve's work. Steve Ditko. This is what the Wiki has to say about it, Wikipedia. This is not WikiLeaks, this is Wikipedia. artist and writer best known as the artist and creator with Stan Lee of the Marvel comic superhero Spider-Man and as creator of the superhero Doctor Strange. Ditko studied under Batman artist Jerry Robinson at the Cartoonist and Illustrator School in New York City. He began his professional career in 1953 working in the studio of Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, beginning as an inker and coming under the influence of artist Mort Mesker. And during this time, he then began his long association with Charlton Comics, where he did work in the genres of science fiction, horror, and mystery. He also created the superhero Captain Atom in 1960. During the 1950s, Ditko also drew for Atlas Comics, forerunner for Marvel Comics, and he went on to contribute such significant work to Marvel in 1996 after being the exclusive artist on The Amazing Spider-Man and Doctor Strange feature in Strange Tales. Ditko left Marvel for reasons never specified. Now, Ditko... obviously, he and Lee did not agree, and I think personally, he resented the fact that Lee, Stan Lee, was one of these entrepreneurial editor publishers who like to take credit for writing stories. I know I've been involved with one myself, and I can sure sympathize with Steve. Steve, because I just got rid of the one that I've been working with for some time, who wanted to take credit for my writing, and so I know how Steve felt. And by the way, Steve went on to create a kind of independently. He went on to create a kind of an Ayn Rand character. Sort of a comic book Atlas Shrugged kind of thing. But he's very, very reclusive. He's a recluse. He doesn't like to give interviews. He doesn't like to talk. However, he was the writer and the creator of Doctor Strange. Now, where did he get his idea and his inspiration for Doctor Strange? Well, we know that, don't we? Shandu was the inspiration for Doctor Strange, and both he and Stan Lee admit that. I mean, that's not something we're coming up with, but But we do know something about Sean New, and obviously, you know, last time you were out here out of Rivendell, you and I watched the Sean New, the big Sean New movie that 20th Century Fox.
Oh yeah, that was one of my very fond memories of coming out to Rivendell.
Oh yeah, Sean New.
We sat down in your living room, and it was after a spring equinox nuptial ritual, and then we had Logan out there, we had Lord Michael and Siren and Lauren, and we were all on the couch, and we had Julio out there, and we had Praetor Hephaestus, and Michael Johnson was out. I think everybody was there.
Yeah,
I can't remember all the names. We were all watching Sean do on your big screen in your living room, right next to your big, Sauron helmet.
and that was
just really cool. We were just sitting there, having a few drinks and watching Sean do. And I'll let you tell the rest of the story. But that was an awesome time.
Well, Sean do was actually a big movie, and it started in 1931 as a radio drama out here in Los Angeles. It was just kind of local to Los Angeles. A fellow by the name of Morgan created it, and it was just as I said in the introduction. It was influenced by Blavatsky and all that crowd, and Sean New was it's kind of confusing in a way because in the film at least he's an American, Frank Chandler, but in the film, they somehow or other present him as a British officer. And that was, of course, very popular in Hollywood at that time, Lives of a Vengeful Lancer and Gunga Din and all that kind of stuff. And unfortunately, Edmund Lowe played Sean New, and Edmund Lowe was not a very charismatic, and he had previously played a hypnotic magician spider, and he had the advantage of being nice and slim when he played the spider, so he looked a little bit he looked a little bit more like Stephen Strange looks in the comic books, but by the time he got to play Sean New, he was put on a little weight, and this British officer's tunic that they dressed him up in, oh boy, you could see all the buttons were kind of just about to pop, and he didn't. So Edmund Lowe, unfortunately, he couldn't equal Cumberbatch in this latest film at all. However, the original Sean New movie, as you remember, was saved by the villain, who was none other than Bela Lugosi in his prime as Rexxar, the mad villain, who also was a magician. And so Bela Lugosi, who had invented had come by a ray gun with which he was going to conquer the world, and of course Sean New had to thwart him. There's so many elements in the Sean New radio shows. I can actually remember that Sean New was the longest running radio drama in radio history. It started in 1931, and I can remember them in the 1940s. I can remember listening to Sean New in the 1940s. Now, of course, it would probably gone off the air and been revived several times, but there was a tremendous amount of story material, and that most of it, as I say, derived from Blavatsky type occultism. That's why you get a lot of astral projection and a lot of occultism based on yoga, and which most of the theosophists were afraid of, but they romanticized it quite a bit. And anyway, the similarities, of course, obviously, because as we know, Doctor Strange was based on on Xandu. And The Shadow, Lamont Cranston, he was another knockoff on Xandu. But the yoga aspect of it, as we said, Xandu had a Hindu Raja Yoga teacher, and whom they show in the film, and they show him in the film, you know, when they show Xandu's graduation in the yoga academy in the film, and you see his astral body rising up out of his physical body, and he walks across the floor of the ashram with his, and he does the Hindu rope trick, and he does all these various things, and he creates illusions, and he hypnotizes people. And as I say, there are a few things about it that are confusing. Like, why is Frank Chandler an American? Why is he a British officer? And he even has, for comedy relief in the Xandu film, they even have his former sergeant, who is an alcoholic, and he's the comedy relief. And he's also played by an American, and but this is supposedly the British Indian Army, and I guess, you know, they just got they just couldn't resist doing a little Gunga Din and throwing a little Gunga Din in there. And one of the things about the original Xandu film is that Cameron Menzies, the great set designer, did the sets, did all the sets for Xandu, and God, they are beautiful. It's 20th Century Fox, and they spent as much on that film as budget wise as probably as Disney and Marvel spent on this latest in terms of their money in those days, and they had no CGI or anything, but they did some amazing stuff.
They say that compared to like the inflation, I mean, there's no way that they could make those old movies today with the way they did everything without CGI. It's impossible.
Okay. On a practical special effects, Menzies, you'd see those sets that Menzies designed and Rexor's laboratory. And he outdoes Frankenstein in his laboratory. By the way, that's one of the reasons why 20th Century Fox did Xandu, is that Xandu debuted on the radio in 1931 in the West Coast, and it immediately was so popular that it jumped over to the East Coast. And Universal had come out with Dracula and Frankenstein and 20th Century Fox said, "Oh, we got to have something. We got to have something like this." So what do? They do Xandu because it was popular on the radio and they did. So and Xandu is available on DVD and along with tonight, along with plugging our book on Hermetic Yoga, which frankly I think, you know, we can say that owes a little bit to, oh, it owes a little bit to Doctor Strange, maybe, and Xandu. But both the Doctor Strange Masterworks books I would strongly recommend, and also I'd recommend the Xandu, the 20th Century Fox Xandu video DVD. And also, while we're on, you know, we ought to talk about the return of Xandu, in which Bela Lugosi plays Frank Chandler, which is in this Bela Lugosi playing Frank Chandler, the American magician, is just about as incongruous as Edmund Lowe with his buttons about to pop off playing Xandu. But the return of Xandu is a lot of fun, though, because they used in the return of Xandu, they used the sets from King Kong, and the return of Xandu is a serial, by the way, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I didn't get to see that one, but I mean, they basically cover like it inspired the magic of Doctor Strange. Xandu, you know, hypnotized people and astral projected, and in a time when that, you know, never been seen before on film, you know, or probably even broadcasted out. I mean, I'm sure Theosophy was not very well known at the time Shandu came out on the general public. You know, so it was kind of, Theosophy was kind of being, you know, more exposure to the general public, right? I mean,
but,
characters.
You're right, but our Theosophical temple out here, which we use for the Golden Dawn, our Theosophical temple it was built around that time and was used as a movie theater. So I think there was a lot of Theosophical and yoga. We had Yogananda, we had a bunch of yogis out here under the auspices of Theosophy that came out to Hollywood. So this was the place, you know, as I say, Shandu got started on the radio out here in Los Angeles, 1931. So it's that a lot of Theosophic and Vivekananda influence, you know, out here at that time. Now, one thing I want to point out, though, that Tibetan Tantric Yoga, which, by the way, Stephen Strange supposedly was trained in, does explore other dimensions. They do, and they explore the worlds of the chakras inside yourself. And one of the things that very definitely influences this whole situation is the idea of the Hindu, the original Hindu pagan gods that are part of Hinduism, all under Brahman, of course, and all, you know, and the Tibetan Hindu and Bunpo gods and demons, which are all under Buddha, and each one of the, you know, there's a chakra system. In the chakra system, these deities inhabit the chakras within yourself. And Tibetan magic, and to some extent Hindu and Sikh magic, is all done sitting down in a yoga seat, in a sauna, inside yourself. And you project these outside yourself. You project these, both the mandalas and the god forms, reabsorb them, and work them inside. You find them inside yourself, and you are the universe. And all this is very hermetic, by the way. And I personally think, and I have said so in our yoga book, that this idea of the planets within this all originated with Pythagoras in the West, and with the magic of the spheres. Yeah, and then it went east. And the reason why I say the proof of this is in Omar Khayyam, where he says, "Up to the throne of Saturn I sat, and above that there was a door with which I found no key." And the throne of Saturn, of course, is the top of the Western system, and that I think is one of the proofs that it originated. The chakras originated in the West, and they went east, and so here we are, as Western magicians, and we want to learn how to access all these other dimensions and these other realms, and how to gain the aid of these entities, and use them and use their power, and the way to do that is to learn yoga, either a combination of tantric and raja. One of the things about raja yoga. Go ahead.
So what you're saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that to access other dimensions, you have to find those other dimensions within yourself? kind of like the macrocosm is the microcosm, or am I misstating that?
Yes and no, and it's a very complex situation. This is a complex thing. The planets within and the dimensions within are other dimensions. You know, as Jacques Vallée and other UFO experts have said, if extraterrestrials ever you know land in your backyard, they're going to come from another dimension. But even if they are extraterrestrials, they're going to have to. There has to be dimensional, you know, the other dimensions. So the key to all of this, and this is what I was driving at. The key to all of this and is the consciousness. And one of the things that we learned in Tibetan Tantra, aside from getting cramps in your legs and your hips from sitting in these positions for so long, one of the things we learned is that the moving of your consciousness point. If you can move your consciousness point to all of the different places inside yourself, inside your body, then you can move it out into a crystal ball, or you can project it out through your third eye all the way out to the stars, and your consciousness point is what the Theosophists call your astral body. And in Doctor Strange, when you in Ditko, you know, often did this. You often had the astral bodies in just without color. He'd do them as you look in the books, and you see them as a sort of a white ghost in the middle of a colored panel flying out. But the truth is that's your consciousness point. And even though you're able to do an OOBE phenomenon or have an OOBE sensation, it's essentially an illusion created to justify the extension of your consciousness point. It's a metaphor. You know, I'm looking down at my body, and I'm going to walk, and you know, you those of us who have done this, you know, if let's say you do it with using the dream method. And you get up and go into the kitchen for a glass of water, all right? And you look down at your hands, and yeah, you can see your hands, because this is, you know, your consciousness point is you, and if you want hands, you're going to have them. And then, of course, you know, as I say, that then go to the window and stick your hand through the glass and feel it go through the glass, you know, and then get it out there and then pull it back.
and the consciousness point in Hermetic yoga, the consciousness point is Saturn. It's the Dot point, right?
Actually, though, we project it through Hesed, you know, through the Jovian, the Hesed center, which is in the third eye. Because the Aath is in the center of the head under the aperture of Brahman. I like to get people to realize this. Once they learn how to move their consciousness point a little bit, most people live inside their head. Most people, their consciousness point is right behind their third eye. And so what I'll do, if I'm having somebody who's having problems understanding all of this, and I don't know whether you've ever seen me do this or I've ever done it with you, but what you do is you get them into a meditative trance, have them close their eyes, you're sitting there, and you go and put your forefinger right in there on their aperture of Brahman on top of the head. And just say, all right, drift up. Can you feel my finger? Yes. All right, let your consciousness point drift up right under my finger.
Can you let their consciousness point drift up? And I said, is your consciousness point right under my finger? Yes, it is. All right, I'm going to lift you out. And then you lift their consciousness point up between your thumb and forefinger, lift it up, and then turn it loose about a foot above their head. And then you tell them, all right, open your spiritual eyes and look around and look around the room and see. And you can give them something to look at. You can make it easier for them by having them stare at a mandala or something first before you do this, and then have them look at it, what they've just looked at. There's ways you can kind of cheat, but it's a very good exercise. And then once they know they can do this, and then of course we have, as you know, we have a method for projecting out of your consciousness point. But the important thing is that for our study of Doctor Strange is that when you read the Doctor Strange comics, or when you go to the Doctor Strange movie and you see him doing all this astral projection, is that his body, his ghost-like astral body, is a metaphor. It's a metaphor for his consciousness point. One of the things Ditko's surrealist artwork panels depicting other dimensions are just really, frankly, awesome. In fact, I think the collection of Ditko's work is really, really amazing. Let me read a little commentary from somebody else on this. Steve Ditko, this is as historian Bradford W. Wright describes, Steve Ditko contributed some of the most surrealistic work to the comic book and gave it a disorienting, hallucinogenic quality. Doctor Strange's adventures take place in bizarre worlds and twisting dimensions that resemble Salvador Dali paintings, inspired by the Pulp Fiction magicians of Stan Lee's childhood, and of course that's Sandu, as well as the contemporary beat culture. Doctor Strange remarkably predicted the youth counterculture's fascination with Eastern mysticism and psychedelia. Never among Marvel's more popular or accessible characters, Doctor Strange still found a niche among an audience seeking a challenging alternative, the more conventional superhero fare. Here again, though, these wonderful, wonderful scenes. Now, in the first film, in the Peter Hooten 1978 Doctor Strange film, they did this. This CGI wasn't really that advanced at that time, so a lot of this other dimensional material was a mixture of CGI and practical effects, and they did a good job.
Wasn't the 78 film with John Mills? And
yeah,
the guy
John
that looked
Mills,
like John Holmes.
Yeah, John Mills did a great job as the Avatar, as the ancient one. But he was entirely hermetic. In fact, he said so. John Mills, when he was starting instructing Stephen Strange, who in that film was a psychiatrist, not a neurosurgeon, when he was instructing Dr. Strange, he said, "This is I'm teaching you the hermetic arts." And interestingly enough, in this new film, get this now, they have the ancient one, who was in the comic books an old Tibetan lama. They've transformed him into a lady Celtic sorceress, who is played by Tilda Swinton. And I think she did a great job, by the way, with the ball.
She really did.
She really did. And Wong the librarian, the two of them, they start teaching Cumberbatch's version of Doctor Strange, and so much of what they're teaching him is hermetic. I mean, it's hermetic, and they even the book that this is fascinating, the book that they bring out and one of her private collection. That strange
one he ripped the page out of.
Yeah, the one that Mordo ripped the page out of was supposedly a book written by Cagliostro, but it's in Sanskrit. Can you imagine this? Cagliostro, it's in Sanskrit, and it's got all this Hermetic symbolism all through it. And then when I say Mordo ripped it out, you know, Mordo was the villain. Baron Mordo was the villain in the original Doctor Strange stories, who betrayed the Order and tried to kill the Ancient One. They
switched it all around, though.
They switched it around. They needed to have, you know, for political correctness, they had to have a black guy in the movie. So they must have struggled. Your friend, the screenwriter that you met, God, I would love to talk to him about the struggling that they went through to try to get their token black actor in there, and they finally just said, okay, all right, let's make him Mordo, and then what are we going to do for a villain then, you know, and well we'll create another European sorcerer, and do the Mordo role.
I do like that actor that played Mordo. I can't pronounce his name.
Oh yeah. It's wait a minute. I got it right here.
The wedge of the hole. I really don't know.
He's
a fantastic actor though.
Good. He's really good, and he plays villains all the time. Let's see, what's his name? I got a couple of reviews here in the Times, and maybe one of them fell down here. No. Oh yeah, here it is. This guy, yeah, he was really good, but he was definitely doing Mordo's part, Mordo's role, because Mordo, you know, gets hooked up with. And he makes an alliance, just like he does in the comics. He makes an alliance with Dormammu, who is that horrendous fire elemental that rules the dark dimension. This guy,
with the face in the floating nebula.
His name is Mads Mikkelsen. Mads Mikkelsen. He's a Swede. No, wait a minute. He's a Swede or a Dane. Let's see. He's a Dane, and he says now that the Brits used to be. He says, oh well, the Brits used to do all these villainous parts, and now the Scandies are doing it. Yeah, Mads Mikkelsen, a sorcerer in Doctor Strange, who doesn't mind bad guy roles, but he don't know. He does a real good job. And one of the things one of the plot twists and gives the black guy playing Mordo something worthwhile to do is that both the Ancient One, Childish Wotan, the Celtic sorcerers, both her. And eventually Doctor Strange, they all draw on Dormammu for his dimension, his dark dimension, for power. Page, that's the page Mads Mikkelsen, the real Mordo, that's the page he tears out of the book. And by the way, that tearing the ritual page out of the book, that came from the magician. The movie about W. Somerset Maugham's book on Crowley, you know, the magician. When Hatto goes into the arsenal and in France and he opens up he gets into the old book and he tears the page out where it gives the ritual where he's supposed to get the blood of a virgin, and he tears it out. That was a rerun of that. That's where that came from. And now, interestingly enough, the way Strange finds out about it, and he finds out about it by discovering this time loop, and he uses his amulet, and they mix Strange's amulet up with the orb of Agamotto, and that's all right. They're both, but Strange uses the amulet, the power of his amulet, to create a time to act as a time machine. And this is very, very well done. They use the apple. You remember the he's eating this apple, and then he goes back, and he goes forward in time, and the apple and the apple core is rotten, and he goes back in time, and the apple is complete, and they use the apple as to show the change of time.
Oh yeah, what was that? They borrowed the time loop from which movie?
They didn't borrow it from it probably was from a movie, but I think it came from Lemley's Necroscope novels, because Lemley used the Necroscope novels. That's where the time loop came from. But where you know the big when he does this, his black sidekick, they call Mordo, gets on him. He says, you're warping the laws of nature. You're not supposed to do this. We took an oath not to do things like this. And because Strange is going to he's going to Dormammu for power, the same way that the ancient one did, and the same way that Mad Mikkelsen does when he tears out the page. So Strange goes back in time to where he can read the page, so he knows how to do it. Then, in the end, now in the Doctor Strange comics, Strange defeats Dormammu defeats Dormammu by a different method, Yeah, but in the new movie, he uses this time loop thing to completely to screw up Dormammu, and this is beautiful the way he does it. He says, Dormammu, I've come to bargain, and Dormammu says, yeah, bargain with me. You know, this great big disembodied, horrible-looking head in the middle of a crab nebula, you know, staring at you, and which is much better than Ditko's anthropomorphic version of Dormammu, which was a guy in spandex with a flaming head. And yet, I'm not trying to run down Ditko. Ditko was a comic book artist, and he was using comic book style. He would anthropomorphize all these characters, and that's comic book style. The time loop story where Strange catches Dormammu in the time loop, and every time he says, "I've come to bargain," and Dormammu gets mad and hurls a spell at him, and then boom, we're right back. Do it again, and they're Strange sitting there. I've come to bargain, and bam, we do it again. And it keeps going on and on and on and on and on until finally Dormammu he just has to give up. And I'm
he's like, "What do you want?"
What do you want? And the original version of it is good too. He makes a deal with Dormammu. I think that this. The film is wonderful. It's a visual feast, and it's just really delightful. But it's got so much good magic in it, and also, once I really got into Tibetan using Tibetan methods, you could go out to the stars. You can go to other planets. You can send your consciousness point, and Hermes says so. You can send your consciousness point anywhere in the universe.
Uh,
So
hey,
I think
Poke, did you stay all the way to the end of the credits?
Yep. And Fuller with the ever full beer mug.
No, the one that was the first post credit scene. But there's a second one at the very, very, very end of the credits with Mordo. Did you stay for that one?
No, I didn't. I think I left before. I didn't realize.
What happened was Mordo walks up to the guy that told Dr. Strange where to find, you know, the Ancient One in Kathmandu, the guy that was playing basketball, the guy that could walk on his own energy. Mordo walks up to him and you know, he reaches in and pulls his magic power out and cripples the guy. He's like, and he takes it and absorbs his power. And he goes, you know, I was thinking really hard about what the problem with the world is today. And the end note to the whole movie is Mordo looks at the guy and the guy goes, why are you doing this? He goes, because there's too many sorcerers.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, are you talking? Is this Matt? Is this Mikkelsen who's doing this?
No, not Mikkelsen. The guy that played Mordo in the movie.
Oh, it's the black guy. The black guy that plays Mordo, Carl Mordo.
Yeah, he finally decides he's gonna start taking out the sorcerers because there's just too many sorcerers breaking the laws of nature. And,
he was irritating. Yeah, well, I hope he doesn't come after us.
So I was like, going, wow, this is a strong warning from this film at the end of it.
Maybe
coming after
maybe
the Hermetic Hour listeners, you know, too many sorcerers, guys. They're coming after you. Watch out! Yeah,
yeah. You know what that means.
The new Inquisition has arrived.
It's a wonderful film, and it's a feast. It's a feast for the senses, and a challenge for the mind, and I think that we pretty well covered it. Next week we'll have another. Another show, hopefully as stimulating as this one has been. Meanwhile, if you have to wait for this to come out in DVD, then be sure to get it then. If not, if you can still find it around the theaters, which I think you can, go out and give it a look. And
go see it in 3D.
What do you
go
like?
See it in
3D. I didn't see it in 3D. Oh. I will next time.
It's amazing in 3D.
Okay, well, 3D, I don't usually like 3D that much, but I'll take your word for it. And the next time I see it, I will definitely see it in 3D. Anyway, that just about wraps up Doctor Strange. And also, don't forget the Shandu film, the Fox Shandu film. That's a good one, too. And the Doctor Strange Masterworks books, number one, volume one, and volume two. And don't forget our Hermetic Yoga, Beyond the Middle Pillar, if you want to learn to be Doctor Strange and do this sort of thing yourself. We're a good place to start. So with that in mind, thank you so much, Frater Heracles, and be well, and my best to you and yours.
I love you. Thank you so much.
Okay.
All right.
Good magic until next week. Good magic, and that wraps it up. Bye.